Michael Saltzman, welcome back to The Signal.
It's so wonderful to see you again, Aaron.
And congratulations on this beautiful anthology, Poetry in Medicine. And, you know, one might be tempted to think that this literary compendium would cater to a rather esoteric niche. But, you know, the truth is there's not much more universal than our own health and mortality, is there?
Absolutely. And it's the point that I try to make in the introduction, that this is really a book for everyone, and that our own health and illness and medicine and doctors are universal subjects that you find in a tremendous amount historically of literature, as well as painting and in all the arts.
And you make a point of communicating that this is not simply a collection of poems by doctors. You're yourself a neurosurgeon who happens to write poetry, or maybe a poet who happens to do neurosurgery.
Possibly.
But there is a great range of voices in this book.
Yes, the vast majority of the poets in this book, unlike previous collections, are not physicians. And of course, the vast majority of great poems that have been written on these subjects have been written by poets who are either full-time writers or had other occupations but were not physicians.
You have divided this anthology into thematic sections. We're going to tour through some of these themes here together, and I want to start with a section titled The Wisdom of the Body, Anatomy and Physiology. And there's a poem in here titled Dear Sir. It's by Sarah Cross. I wonder if you might maybe say a few words about this poem and read it for us.
Well, she's a young physician poet, and I can't recall the specialty that she has right now, but this poem clearly was written when she was dissecting her cadaver in the first year of medical school, studying gross anatomy, and it proceeds from a dissection of the petrous bone in the base of the skull, where the mechanism for hearing is located, onto the chest and onto the limbs. Dear Sir, with my chisel I removed the petrous portion of your temporal bone to discover the tiny majestic malleus attached to the tympanic membrane, its hanging no less or more marvelous than vibration. These are the deepest parts. I cut the heart from your chest, opened the thunderous wall of the left ventricle to touch the billows of the aortic valve, three smooth leaves, a pale blooming parachute. So we have been intimate, but I do not know you. Only imagine the work you once did in the world. As I peel the sinewy skin from your palm, its soft pads finally giving way, I grasp each finger from smallest to thumb as I loose and then take the muscles, a fine motion which you may have used to hold those that you loved.
A poem by Sarah Cross, Dear Sir, read by Michael Saltzman. And Dr. Saltzman, what's that experience like, you know, being a young medical student and learning anatomy on a cadaver? Can you remember back?
Oh, I can. That experience for me began with bringing the cadavers up from an old-fashioned ice house at a very old medical school building in Boston. And the four of us would carry the cadaver from that building into the anatomy lab. And then we started to talk to it during the dissection, just like Dr. Cross does, thinking of it really as a friend. As a person who had given us the great gift of knowledge.
Dr. Saltzman, there's a section in your anthology. It's titled Powders, Pills, and Other Remedies. And there's a poem in here by, I'm sure I'm going to pronounce this poet's name wrong, Wisława Zimbrowska. And it's titled Advertisement. First of all, how do you pronounce that poet's name?
Wisława Zimbrowska.
Okay, and the poem is titled Advertisement. I wonder if you could read that one for us.
My pleasure. Zimbrowska is a Polish poet who, in the not-too-distant past, won the Nobel Prize for Literature. Advertisement. I'm a tranquilizer. I'm effective at home. I work in the office. I can take exams or the witness stand. I mend broken cups with care. All you have to do is take me, let me melt beneath your tongue, just gulp me with a glass of water. I know how to handle misfortune, how to take bad news. I can minimize injustice, lighten up God's absence, or pick the widow's veil that suits your face. What are you waiting for? Have faith in my chemical compassion. You're still a young man, woman. It's not too late to learn how to unwind. Who said you have to take it on the chin? Let me have your abyss. I'll cushion it with sleep. You'll thank me for giving you four paws to fall on. Sell me your soul. There are no other takers. There is no other devil anymore.
A poem by Wisława Szymborska, Advertisement, read here by Michael Saltzman. It's like the serpent talking to Eve. That's what I hear. We put so much faith in pharmaceuticals, you know? And then we have this nagging feeling that they're robbing us of our souls.
And it's a very seductive voice, isn't
it?
Yeah. One of the most amazing things about Szymborska is that she wrote or published only about 200 poems. They're mostly one-pagers like this, short poems. And so she has that kind of concision that Elizabeth Bishop has, that several other really great poets who, instead of having thousands of poems in a fat collected volume, this is very narrow, precise work.
You're tuned to The Signal. I'm Aaron Henkin. If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Michael Saltzman. He is a neurosurgeon, a poet, and now editor of the poetry collection Poetry in Medicine, an anthology of poems about doctors, patients, illness, and healing. And Dr. Saltzman, I was happy to see that a few of your own poems make appearances in this comprehensive collection. And I wonder if you might read the one titled Medulloblastoma. Am I saying that right? You're teaching. You've given me quite a pronunciation lesson.
Just about. Medulloblastoma.
Medulloblastoma. This is a short but extremely powerful poem, and I feel like its power comes from what it doesn't say.
Well, thank you. We should just say that this is the name of a tumor that is the most common malignant brain tumor of children, and it's in a section called From the Children's Ward, poems about sick children and recovering children. Medulloblastoma. I hear you're writing a thesis on the deaths of children expressed in poems. Perhaps you haven't seen them die yourself, and if you did, might forego the subject. I'm writing to tell you how the crusts of their scalps become very dry after chemo, and the tiny hairs left behind curl like watch springs. They are the first to know, their eyes glimmering with knowledge. It's useless to tiptoe around their beds, to whisper and tell them lies. Their dying is slow, and they see it from a long way off.
What I take from that is that some human moments are better left unbothered by the intrusion of academic analysis.
Yes.
Words have a limit to what they ought to approach.
Words have a limit, and also I guess the main theme of this is that children are very knowing and very wise, and when they see people tiptoeing around their bed and not telling them the truth, they can smell it.
A lot of poems in this anthology are obviously very heavy, but I should say there are a few poetic, maybe you could call them palate cleansers, they come along as really welcome moments of levity in this collection. I want to give you a chance maybe to change gears and read a poem now by Ogden Nash. This is a poem titled The Common Cold.
Ogden Nash lived in Baltimore most of his life, and for a while he had a job in New York, and people were always asking him why he wouldn't move to New York. He said that he really liked New York, but he loved Baltimore.
So he's one of many Baltimore writers who, I should say, are represented in this collection.
And if you know Nash's work, you'll know that it's full of puns. So this is a poem in which he deeply resents the fact that he's been told that he has a common cold. The poem is called The Common Cold. Go hang yourself, you old M.D. You shall no longer sneer at me. Pick up your hat and stethoscope. Go wash your mouth with laundry soap. I contemplate a joy exquisite in never paying you for your visit. I did not call you to be told my malady is a common cold. By pounding brow and swollen lip, by fever's hot and scaly grip, by those two red redundant eyes that weep like woeful April skies, by racking snuffle, snort and sniff, by handkerchief after handkerchief, this cold you wave away as naught is the damnedest cold man ever caught. Give ear, you scientific fossil. Here is the genuine cold colossal, the cold of which researchers dream, the perfect cold, the cold supreme. This honored system humbly holds the super cold to end all colds, the cold crusading for democracy, the furor of the streptococracy. Bacilli swarm within my portals, such as were ne'er conceived by mortals, but bred by scientists wise and hoary in some Olympic laboratory. Bacteria as large as mice, with feet of fire and heads of ice, who never interrupt for slumber their stamping elephantine rumba. A common cold, forsooth, gadzooks. Ah, yes, and Lincoln was jostled by Booth. Don Juan was a budding gallant, and Shakespeare's plays show signs of talent. The Arctic winter is fairly coolish, and your diagnosis is fairly foolish. Oh, what a derision history holds for the man who belittled the cold of colds.
A beautiful rendition of a poem by Ogden Nash, The Common Cold, read here by Dr. Michael Saltzman. And I should just check in with you. There is still really no cure for the common cold, is there?
Either 14 days or 2 weeks works perfectly well.
So this poem is appropriate as it ever was.
Yes.
I want to move on to a section now in your anthology. It's titled Looking Inside, Procedures, Surgical and Diagnostic. And I imagine these poems are of particular interest to you, you being a neurosurgeon. I wonder if you might first read this poem by Bob Hickok. It's titled Surgery.
Surgery. Masked, they cut you, peel back your skin for the legend of light to enter your body. In this moment, they love you. You'll know this years from now when beating a rug, you feel their hands inside you. A shock of warmth, invasion of concern, as if you were back on the table, but awake and aware of the fear, dilating their eyes. How else can it be for the strangers who take your breath, contain it in a machine and give it back, its meter undisturbed? They cut to flaw, down to a blue tumor the size of an olive. As they do, they think of time, how little it takes for the riotously dividing cells to reach blood, to enter the cosmos of a body and travel to another organ, another world, advancing cancers, parasitical flowering. Finally, they try to erase any sign they were there, stitch and staple where they've cut. If done well, it's like walking backward across a newly mopped floor. There are only a few clues, in this case, a scar, and the fact on any trivial day, you're still alive.
Surgery, a poem by Bob Hickok from the anthology Poetry in Medicine. Dr. Michael Saltzman is the editor of the book, and Dr. Saltzman, I guess it's easy for us to get preoccupied with the drama of going through a big operation, big procedure, us as patients, but then, you know, maybe less easy for us to comprehend the incredible long-term impact of its success.
Yes, and I think that's wonderful about this poem. So much of it is about the people who are doing the surgery, what they're looking at, what they're doing, and what trivial, seemingly trivial events of your own life recall the operation to you, and then all of a sudden at the end, on any trivial day, that you're still alive.
I think an interesting complement to this poem is one that shows up, I think, a little later in your anthology, Dr. Saltzman. It's called Doctors, and it's by Anne Sexton. I wonder if you could read that one for us next.
Well, I think a few words about Anne Sexton are important to include before this reading. She was part of that extraordinary generation of so-called confessional poets that arrived around the middle of the 20th century, around 1950, and their leader was Robert Lowell, soon to be superseded by Elizabeth Bishop. And there were several other prominent members, including Sexton. And these poets, one and all, were bothered by depression, by a manic depressive psychosis, by alcoholism. And Sexton herself eventually was a suicide. And she wrote many medical poems, as did Sylvia Plath, who was also a member of this group. Doctors. They work with herbs and penicillin. They work with gentleness and the scalpel. They dig out the cancer, close an incision, and say a prayer to the poverty of the skin. They are not gods, though they would like to be. They are only a human trying to fix up a human. Many humans die. They die like the tender, palpitating berries in November. But all along the doctors remember, first do no harm. They would kiss if it would heal. It would not heal. If the doctors cure, then the sun sees it. If the doctors kill, then the earth hides it. The doctors should fear arrogance more than cardiac arrest. If they are too proud, and some are, then they leave home on horseback, but God returns them on foot.
The Anne Sexton poem, Doctors, read here by Dr. Michael Saltzman. Doctors really have to walk a tightrope, it seems, between ultimate humility on one end of the spectrum and arrogance on the other, and confidence, functional confidence, being somewhere in the middle.
Absolutely.
I'm going to ask you to read, finally, a poem by Elizabeth J. Coleman. It's near the end of your anthology, and it's a beautifully understated poem, I think. It's titled, I Want to Start Again.
It's in the section on convalescence that closes the book, and the poet is one of the sweetest, most caring people you would ever meet in your life. And the poem is called, And I Want to Start Again. I ride backward on the train, face the guy replacing me, talk about problems that are no longer mine. And I'm a zebra running in the season of great migration in the bush. I'm the turkey speared by the president on Thanksgiving. I'm the pigeon that didn't get run over by the SUV. The rat that found the square of bread left by a homeless man in the subway. It took moxie to walk away, a colleague says. How I love that word, born of a soft drink. But it wasn't so much moxie talking as a brush with cancer. I'd like grandchildren, or at least a dog. Try to remember that Buddhist idea that all the dogs on the street are mine and everybody's, and things don't belong to us. Then I picture the photo of my children sitting on the grass with the Eiffel Tower in the background when we were young and making dumb mistakes, and I want to start again.
A poem by Elizabeth J. Coleman. And Dr. Saltzman, I guess here we arrive at the final and proper conclusion of this anthology, if there is one, and that is that while we may not have control over our own mortality, I guess we ought to at least remember that we have control over how we choose to live our lives.
And how we choose to live our lives, of course, has a great deal to do with our health and with our longevity. And all of the decisions that we make through life have some bearing on these very important matters.
Dr. Michael Saltzman is the editor of Poetry in Medicine, an anthology of poems about doctors, patients, illness, and healing. It's published by Persea Books and the website PerseaBooks.com. And Dr. Saltzman, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure, and thank you.